Hey, this is Victoria Baranetsky. I'm Reveal's general counsel, our lead attorney. I'm here to ask for your urgent support. Our team is about to head back into the courtroom to defend Reveal from a libel lawsuit. We were sued over 5 years ago by Planet Aid after our reporting raised significant questions about whether government funds from the charity were reaching the people they were intended to help. One federal judge already dismissed this lawsuit as meritless, but Planet Aid appealed, and so now we're heading to the court to defend our journalism and the First Amendment. We've poured countless hours and resources into fighting this case, because it's not just about Reveal. It's about protecting the freedom of press. Without robust protections for the press, there are no safeguards for the truth or democracy. Please show your support for Reveal and for the First Amendment and donate now. Just visit revealnews.org/now. Again, to donate now, just go to revealnews.org/now. Thank you.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. It's almost midnight in the summer of 98, and the St. Louis Cardinals clubhouse is jam-packed with reporters. Everyone is jostling for space, ducking under cameras, waiting.
It was glorious. The circus came to town.
That's Associated Press reporter Steve Wilstein. He's a part of the scrum. They are all there to cover the home run race. Mark McGwire had just hit his 45th homer of the season and is on pace to break the single season record.
I was giddy about it. I was a little league player who liked hitting home runs, and now to see these guys do it, and as far as they were hitting it, this baseball is best.
But Wilstein is there to cover baseball history.
My philosophy is to bring the reader as close as possible into the scene, into the locker room. And I'm always filling my yellow legal pad with notes about details that may or may not make it into a story. It's just something I did my whole career, and sometimes it pays off.
He notices Cardinals legend Stan Musial's number displayed on the wall above McGwire's locker. He writes that down, along with other stuff he sees inside the locker.
I saw the can of Popeye spinach, which I thought was funny. And then I saw this pack of sugarless gum. And I knew his father was a dentist, so I thought that was cute and all-American. He said it wasn't chewing tobacco.
You see, sports lockers are really more like cubbies. There are no doors, no padlocks with combinations. They're just open spaces, overflowing with gear, plastered with pictures of wives and kids. So Wilstein figured his observations were fair game. And as he scans the shelf one final time, he notices a small bottle of pills that should go in the notebook too.
I didn't know what it was, and so I spelled it out carefully in my notebook.
What he writes is androstenedione. It's a mouthful, so most people just call it andro. And when he carefully copies those 15 letters into his notepad, it sets off a chain reaction that will turn the home run race from a party to something very different. This week, we're partnering with a podcast called Crushed from Religion of Sports. It looks at how baseball got hooked on performance-enhancing drugs and whether it's ever recovered. We first aired this episode last summer. Joan Neeson, host of Crushed, is a sports writer and St. Louis native. She was just 10 in 98, and she remembers it as the summer she fell in love with baseball. Joan picks up the story.
While the Cardinals are getting ready, big Mark McGwire needs just 2 home runs to tie and 3 home runs for baseball history.
1998 was Major League Baseball's biggest season in decades.
This could be the weekend that McGwire breaks Roger Maris's single-season home run record.
Fans packed ballparks to watch Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa chase the most sacred record in sports. And the league needed every moment of airtime, milked the spectacle for all it was worth. You see, 4 years earlier, a player's strike had canceled the World Series and left fans disillusioned.
Now, I think it stinks. I mean, they're already making enough money.
I think the whole thing's a result of obscene pursuit of wealth.
It's really not our pastime anymore.
Now, home runs were bringing baseball back, and McGwire, the St. Louis Cardinals' first baseman, was the hero baseball needed. He was humble, hardworking, wholesome, the whole shebang. He looked the part, too. Tall, brawny, with short red hair and action figure biceps.
Oh, he's gorgeous. He's cute.
Do you think Mark McGuire's more interesting than the president?
Definitely.
People are out here to see him. That's basically why we got our tickets, really.
Mark McGuire is a true American hero.
That summer, it was easy to be distracted by the fireworks, to see what we wanted to see, but not for Steve Wilstein. When he got home from St. Louis and started paging through all of his reporting, one word on his pad stuck out. Androstenedione. What was in that bottle? He picked up the phone.
I called a friend of mine who was a doctor, and he told me that it was used by bodybuilders. And he mentioned to me that somebody using that is probably using other steroids.
If what he'd said was true, Wilstein had a much different story on his hands than the one he imagined. But before he started writing, he had more research to do and calls to make. First, Wilstein reached out to a few Olympics writers. What did they know about this pill? One answered right away. The International Olympic Committee, or IOC, had outlawed it a year earlier. Not only that, after gold medalist shot putter Randy Barnes tested positive, he was banned from the games for life. And as Wilstein thought more about what he'd just learned, something else began to nag at him.
I had known McGuire for, more than 10 years. I never saw him look like that.
McGuire had gotten really big. At this point, he was listed at 250 pounds, which was 60 pounds heavier than the average player.
Your mind is thinking, how did they get so big?
He wasn't the only one. Players across baseball were getting more gargantuan each year. But how? Wilstein hadn't set out to answer that question, but he was about to. Wilstein was no stranger to covering athletes whose performances seemed almost unbelievable. And he'd learned to question what he was watching. You see, anabolic steroids had begun to creep into many sports by the 90s. They're synthetic, or man-made testosterone. They make athletes bigger, stronger, faster. And they're also illegal. So was Andro an anabolic steroid? Or was it just an innocent, over-the-counter supplement? Back then, that's how the FDA classified it.
I went online and found that it was being sold openly on the internet. And then I called GNC, and I talked to somebody who I didn't know, and I said, tell me about androstenedione. Do you sell a lot of it?
Turns out, they did. The supplement industry was booming. Just a few years earlier, Congress had passed a bill that totally deregulated it. Advertising for this stuff was everywhere. Wilstein didn't know it at the time, but even McGuire had an endorsement deal with a supplement company, one that sold Andro. But if it was legal and all of a sudden deregulated, why had the IOC just banned it? Wilstein found a few reasons.
First of all, it could artificially boost performance. So it had the effect of cheating. And it's used usually in conjunction with Winstrol or Stanozolol and Decadurobilin.
Those are all anabolic steroids.
But I couldn't write about all those things, and I didn't want to insinuate at the time that he was using those things, but all I knew was the Andro.
And as he kept reporting, he found out it wasn't just the IOC that had clamped down.
By 1998, the NFL had banned it, and so had the NCAA. So anybody caught using it in any NCAA tournament, or in the NFL, or in the Olympics, would be banned or would be thrown out of the tournaments.
Wilstein learned the NBA, NHL, and Major League Baseball still allowed Andro use. In fact, when it came to drugs, baseball was particularly lawless. It had no policy at all, just an honor system. Anabolic steroids were technically against the rules, but only because the government had made them illegal in 1990. And that was the extent of baseball's guidance. It told players not to take illegal drugs, but there were no tests and no punishments.
So the thrust of my story wasn't so much a condemnation of McGuire. It was about the difference between baseball's rules and everybody else's rules.
Wilstein's story ran in newspapers across America, under the headline Drug Okay in Baseball, Not Olympics.
Sitting on the top shelf of Mark McGuire's locker, next to a can of Popeye spinach and packs of sugarless gum, is a brown bottle labeled androstenedione.
In retrospect, it reads as almost too fair toward McGuire.
No one suggests that McGuire wouldn't be closing in on Roger Maris's home run record without the over-the-counter drug, but the drug's ability to raise levels of the male hormone, which builds lean muscle mass and promotes recovery after injury, is seen outside baseball as cheating and potentially dangerous.
Willstein had written a story about baseball's lack of a drug policy, but readers took it as an accusation that McGuire was a fraud. Fans refused to hear it. They'd invested so much in the home run race, in McGuire, that they took the story as an affront.
Yeah, I think it's no story, really. It's just something that the media's chasing.
If it's legal, do it. That's just smart. That's not stupid.
Well, for one thing, he hit 49 home runs right. The year before that Andro, whatever it is, was even invented.
McGuire himself pointed a finger at Willstein to distract from the implications of what he'd written.
There was no basis on that article. The basis was that some guy from the AP was snooping in my locker.
Tony La Russa, who was McGuire's manager during his early years in Oakland and again in St. Louis, was outraged. He threatened to ban media from the clubhouse, even though he had no power to do so.
This guy goes to the gym every day and works. All that hard work is being tainted by crap like this.
Willstein doesn't think he overstepped, and neither do I. It's not as if he went looking for salacious details about McGuire. He only reported on things relevant to his story, and Andro was just that. It might have had a direct effect on the home run race, and baseball wasn't regulating it.
You know, if I had seen something like Viagra, I never would have reported it because it wouldn't have any relevance to baseball. But if you see something that is a testosterone booster, well, that does have to do with baseball.
Looking back, it's shocking to see such a one-sided reaction. Willstein had uncovered the beginnings of baseball's biggest scandal since Pete Rose bet against his own team. And instead of thinking critically, most people plugged their ears and yelled.
If I turned on a sports talk radio in my car, I would hear people really angry about the story and attacking me. Then they'd call me all kinds of names, a lot of expletives. There was also a lot of hate letters and emails that were violent. They took it as an attack on McGuire, but in a sense, they take it as an attack on themselves because they're so involved and immersed in him. People don't like to see their heroes taken down.
To fans in Major League Baseball, Willstein had written a hit piece, not only on McGuire, but on all the fun everyone was having. The league had no incentive to engage. It was too busy building up players like McGuire as role models, heroes, the best thing baseball had to offer. Willstein's story came out just a few weeks before McGuire broke the home run record.
Gone! There it is! 62!
But his record wouldn't last long. That's next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Back in 98, when St. Louis Cardinal Mark McGuire broke the single-season home run record, it was a big deal. Baseball's commissioner, Bug Selig, handed him a trophy on the field. President Clinton called to congratulate him. But 3 years later, the tone had shifted. Barry Bonds of the San Francisco Giants was baseball's new home run king, but this time around, the reaction was different. No one from the opposing team even congratulated him as he rounded the bases. After the game, Bonds gave a speech to the crowd. It was subdued.
We've come a long way. We've had our ups and downs.
Baseball's commissioner wasn't even there. The president never called. The spell of the home run race had been broken. The magic had run out. Bonds was a black man in a whitewashed sport, and fans held him to a different standard. Think about it. McGuire and Bonds both looked as if they were taking steroids when they broke the record. But only with Bonds were people willing to see that possibility, to let it ruin the moment. Here's sports writer Howard Bryant.
The public was like, okay, we're done celebrating. Were they done celebrating because it was Bonds? Were they done celebrating because he was black? Were they done celebrating because this is ridiculous? Yeah, it was probably all the above.
Today, we're looking back on baseball's steroid era with our partners from Religion of Sports. In an episode we first aired last year, their podcast, Crushed, looks at what happens when your love of a sport is built on a major league lie. Joan Neeson, the show's host, brings us back to the summer when it all started to unravel.
In the summer of 2001, Jeff Nowitzki was glued to his television. A lifelong fan of Bay Area sports, he couldn't believe what he was seeing from Barry Bonds. He was baseball royalty, the son of a Giants legend, the godson of Hall of Famer Willie Mays. He'd been the best player in baseball for more than a decade, ever since he was a speedy, lithe, 5-tool player who could do anything, everything. But over the past few years, Bonds had remade his game and his body. He was a home run machine. So Nowitzki wedged himself into the packed stands in San Francisco anytime he could score a ticket. He kept showing up for games, standing with the crowd to cheer Bonds, hoping for a new home run king. But the next year, things became complicated. You see, Nowitzki was an IRS special agent, and in 2002, he got a tip about the case that would make his career.
My father's really good friend, the high school track and field coach in the San Francisco Bay Area, and he actually just, you know, a casual conversation, started talking about this place in Burlingame, California called Balco Laboratories.
Balco. It stood for the Bay Area Laboratory Cooperative, and it claimed to be a supplement company based at a nondescript office park near the San Francisco airport.
What he was hearing is some very high-profile athletes were going there and getting what he knew to be designer-type steroids.
This is where we are now. We've moved past androstenedione, past testosterone, to mad scientist stuff. These drugs were undetectable because tests don't just flag any and all steroids. They have to be looking for a specific hormone or compound. And if a steroid is developed in secret, like these were, then it isn't on any lists, and there's no way to test for it. And if Balco was an illegal steroid ring, it was more than likely ducking its taxes, which meant Nowitzki had the leeway to investigate. He was immediately intrigued. You see, he's the son of a college basketball coach, had been a star high jumper in high school, and played Division I college hoops. He loves sports.
I don't have all good qualities, but the ones that I do have that are good, I can trace back to lessons I learned growing up playing sports.
Nowitzki got to work. His first order of business was to figure out what exactly was going on at that out-of-the-way office park. So he defaulted to a tried-and-true tactic, what any good agent would do to kickstart this kind of investigation. Dumpster diving. Nowitzki began to keep watch on the Balco building and to show up late on Mondays, the night before trash day.
So I'd wait till sometimes midnight, 1 a.m, so that everyone from the business park had gone home, pull my car into the area where the trash was, and then quickly transfer it from the trash bin to my car and then take off out of there. I'd usually go find some lighting nearby so that I could then examine it.
He did this every week for a year. This sounds disgusting. But to Nowitzki, it was some of the easiest dumpster diving of his career.
I've had some nightmare garbage runs where people were suspecting that their trash was being looked for and they were putting dead animals in their trash. I mean, so you can imagine late at night, you're cold, it's already a little bit scary, you're looking into this dark bin and you start pulling out dead animals. That can have an impact on you. So comparatively in my trash examination career, this is one of the easier ones. You know, I did the trash runs on Monday night. By Tuesday morning, I started looking forward to the next Monday night. Like, what am I going to find next week? I was finding evidence that just was blowing my mind. I was finding discarded performance-enhancing drug wrappers, notes from athletes ordering their next cycle of drugs, email addresses that were being used, bank account information.
Nowitzki said he found notes from one of Balco's main chemists, the mastermind behind all these undetectable steroids, a guy by the name of Patrick Arnold. Arnold had made his reputation as the first person in the U.S. to manufacture and mass-produce Andro, those pills Steve Wilstein found in Mark McGuire's locker. This was all connected, these new drugs and the drugs that had been seeping into baseball for years. Sure, Bauko was working with athletes from a variety of sports, football, track and field, you name it. But Nowitzki's case zeroed in on America's pastime.
Once we started conducting surveillance on it, we started to see some very, very high-profile customers coming in and out of Bauko, including Barry Bonds.
Now, as far as Bonds was concerned, this wasn't a huge surprise. Bauko's front was that it was a supplement company, and Bonds was open about the fact that he used its products.
So as opposed to paying Bauko, he basically did promotional material for them, saying, hey, it's these supplements that I'm using.
There was no paper trail linking Bonds to a steroid purchase, but that was fine. Nowitzki was fairly certain the slugger was using, thanks to what he'd found in the trash. He also suspected Bonds and other Giants players were getting their steroids from Bonds' personal trainer, a guy named Greg Anderson. He would turn out to be the key to this whole case. And Anderson worked with Bauko in some capacity.
We saw him show up at Bauko, step inside for a matter of minutes, come out with something, and then get into his car. And I surveilled it up to the Giants ballpark. He parked in the players' parking lot, went inside the park for 5 or 10 minutes, and then drove off. So in terms of putting pieces of the puzzle together, it surely appeared that Bauko had Major League Baseball clients.
Inside the Giants clubhouse, head trainer Stan Conti noticed Anderson hanging around.
He was a really big, huge muscle man guy with tons of tattoos.
He was everywhere, by Bond's side in the clubhouse, in the weight room, as he broke the home run record. Conti suspected Anderson was a drug dealer and went to the general manager with his concerns.
I had told Brian Sabian that we had a drug dealer in the clubhouse. And he said, do you know any DEA agents? Well, I did, actually. I did. One of the ex-patients of mine years ago, he said, well, call them and see if Anderson is under surveillance or they're looking at him.
That agent told Conti nothing was going on, because at that point, the investigation was in the hands of the IRS. But when Nowitzki had enough evidence to act, he got a search warrant and looped in a local narcotics task force, the Food and Drug Administration, and the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency. This was now much bigger than taxes.
An Internal Revenue Service raid at the headquarters of Balco, just south of San Francisco.
All of a sudden, SWAT teams came in. It was like out of the movies.
That was in September of 2003, and at first, it didn't turn many heads. The Balco raid was a local news story and little more, until the federal government convened a grand jury. It called star athletes who'd been linked to Balco to testify about whatever the raid had turned up. American sports were headed to court.
Sometime role models like Yankee slugger Jason Giambi, home run record holder Barry Bonds, or linebacker Bill Romanowski, and dozens of other athletes have all been called before a federal grand jury to talk about the nutritional help they've gotten from Balco Labs.
To get the athletes to cooperate, the government offered them immunity. That way, they could tell the truth without any threat of legal trouble.
In traditional drug investigations, you're not going after the end user. Typically, what you're trying to do is, you know, flip them, try to figure out who's the one selling.
This was the government's strategy for clamping down on steroids in sports, to cut off supply. And Nowitzki didn't object. But still, something felt off to him.
What these athletes were doing was perpetuating a fraud on their sport. So they were getting millions and millions of dollars from it. Notwithstanding that, we still said, no, this deserves, you know, treatment of a typical drug investigation. As long as, you know, these athletes are truthful to us, we're going to consider them just witnesses.
As soon as word got out that athletes were set to testify, journalists began to stake out the federal courthouse in San Francisco, taking notes and recording footage. Lance Williams, an investigative reporter at the San Francisco Chronicle, was one of them.
The grand jury, after convening, subpoenaed some 35 great athletes, some of the greatest athletes of the era, and every last one of them had to walk into the federal building in San Francisco and take the elevator upstairs. And couple of the athletes, I remember, gave the finger to the camera people, and one guy wore a jacket over his head, I recall.
Bonds testified. So did Giambi, a former MVP, and gold medal-winning track star Marion Jones. The list went on, and the public clamored to know what was happening behind closed doors. This, the scene, the cameras, the live shots beamed across the United States, it was exactly what Nowitzki had hoped for when he took the case.
Your job as a federal agent is to find those real high-profile cases, specifically that the media is going to be excited about and cover, and then get the word out that the government's, you know, enforcing these laws or investigating. This would be a great case that would get significant impact and positively affect voluntary compliance with laws.
That sounds like law enforcement jargon, but it's not. It's actually important. What Nowitzki is saying is that a case like Balco, one that reaches so many eyes and ears, can shift the national conversation. It might be a deterrent, might make drug dealers afraid the government was coming for them next. It also could make athletes leery to use steroids or open fans' eyes to how pervasive this stuff was in sports. So the feds needed the press. They just miscalculated how to handle that relationship. You see, for all the reporting done from the courthouse, there was no way for any of the media there to know what the athletes had said. The government held their testimony under wraps. Then, four people were charged with crimes related to Balco's distribution of illegal steroids. The lab's founder was one. Greg Anderson, the trainer, was another. But the athletes didn't get in any kind of legal trouble, and their names were redacted from the indictments.
They went out of their way, the government did, to protect the public from learning the only information anybody really cared about was what the sports stars had done. So our reporting job after that, Mark and me, was to try to fill in the blanks and figure out who the athletes were and what they had done.
Williams and his reporting partner at The Chronicle, Mark Fainaruwata, worked source after source. They needed to find someone who would tell them what had happened behind closed doors. But it was a big ask. Because the grand jury testimony was sealed, it was illegal for anyone with access to share it. But eventually, a source delivered and anonymously leaked the testimony. There were pages and pages of sealed documents implicating dozens of athletes. Jones, Giambi, and there was even more dirt on Bonds, enough to confirm without a doubt that he'd received steroids from Balco.
Bonds has repeatedly denied using steroids, but a report in the San Francisco Chronicle today drew him ever closer to a scandal, embarrassing the sport to say the least.
Except Major League Baseball never seemed particularly ashamed, or even as if it had noticed what was going on. Bonds was never suspended or forced to answer to any of those accusations. And our IRS agent, Jeff Nowitzki, kept showing up to watch him play. Through it all, through the mountains of trash and hours spent bored in his car, staring at the Balco lab, Nowitzki remained a Giants fan. And as he came closer and closer to cracking the case, the sheer enormity of what he was undertaking began to wear on him.
Most hallowed record in sports just goes down. And now all of a sudden I have the answers to how that was achieved and how that happened. You know, there were times during that investigation where I'd go to a game and here I am sitting in the crowd with everybody else and Barry goes yard and I'm standing up and cheering and then sitting down and thinking, man, this is kind of like, this is weird that you're still a fan and cheering yet you know what's going on.
It was impossible to turn off the part of his brain that had been programmed his entire life to pull for the Giants. Of course it was. This stuff isn't rational. And Nowitzki knew that when news of his investigation broke, fans would be defensive, angry. As irrational as he was when he stood and cheered the man he was in the process of taking down.
For a period of year and a half, like I'd go to these games, even just walking through the street, looking at people's faces in my head thinking, wait till you find out. You know what the truth is here. Like, people were going to be freaking out, and they were, you know, when it came out.
The Chronicle reported Bonds had denied using steroids in front of the grand jury, under oath. But it also reported on the evidence Nowitzki had turned up, the paper trail that indicated Bonds had in fact been juicing for years. And Giants fans, by and large, believed their favorite player. They said Nowitzki had a vendetta. They said Fainaruwata and Williams did too. They said their story was bogus, that they were making it up.
I remember I was going to meet my son at the Oakland Coliseum, and I was riding over on BART,
That's a public transit system in the Bay Area.
And Mark and I had been on some sports talk TV show the previous day, and there's this guy looking at me. And he had seen me on TV, and he was a big Giants fan. And so as I was getting up to leave the train, he started yelling at me. He said, "It's personal with you and Bonds, isn't it?" And he's following me. He's yelling, "Barry's not going down. You going down."
Nowitzki was also targeted for his role in bringing the truth to light. Critics said he'd overstepped his bounds, was overzealous in taking these athletes down.
As a federal agent, you're used to working behind the shield. Pretty early on, we went public with the indictment of the Balco kind of core players. And then my search warrant was unsealed. Then all of a sudden, it was stories not on the IRS investigating, but Jeff Nowitzki, this former athlete, investigating.
Remember, Nowitzki had played college basketball.
And the defense teams jumped all over this and started to spin that narrative. Hey, Jeff is a former athlete, failed athlete, didn't, you know, get to where he wanted to get to. And he's basically just jealous of all the success. And this is his way of getting back.
He even got death threats.
Things like, someone should go put a bullet in Nowitzki's head. I just didn't know, you know, at what point somebody could try to come after me.
For a while, the FBI followed him to make sure he was safe.
But I carried my gun with me everywhere I went. I wouldn't carry it openly, but I had either a little ankle holster or like a little fanny pack that the gun would be in. So kind of scary to think about it, but I coached all my girls. So I'm coaching, you know, soccer, softball, volleyball, and you always thinking them through scenarios. Hey, if someone attacks me here and I'm coaching all these kids, what do I do?
You'd think that this case would have made everyone irate at the athletes who cheated. But instead, fans were angry at the IRS agent, and the government went after the journalist who'd exposed the truth. The Department of Justice threatened Fainaru Wada and Williams, demanding they give up their source. Here's Williams again.
Once they lock in on you, they treat you like you set off a bomb under a police station. I mean, they go really hard, you know, so that's what we're up against.
Williams and Fainaru Wada were not about to comply. Yes, what their source had done was illegal, but they'd promised anonymity. They wouldn't go back on that, and a federal judge sentenced them on 2 counts of contempt of court.
We were sentenced to 18 months, and then the prosecutor said, when you're done, we're going to convene a new grand jury and call you in front of that, and if you won't talk again, you'll do another 18 months. So it was like, oh man, that's starting to add up.
Williams and Fainaru Wada filed an appeal and waited. Meanwhile, Balco's founder and Greg Anderson pled guilty, so the case never went to trial. Then the Justice Department identified the Chronicle's source without the reporter's cooperation. And it was just about the last person anyone would have expected. Troy Ellerman, the lawyer who'd represented some of the Balco defendants. He was incensed by the fact that prosecutors seemed to be covering for star athletes. Leaking was his act of rebellion, and he was sentenced to 30 months in prison, more than twice as much time as any of the dealers or distributors. And the athletes, the players who'd been the faces of their sports, who in some cases still were?
Major League Baseball did nothing. The Giants did nothing. Nobody did anything. And it was almost like the story had never been written. Commissioner Selig, despite his professing a profound interest in cleaning up the game, his main initial reaction to the indictments in the Balco case was to issue a gag order. Nobody in baseball was supposed to talk about Balco. And when Reggie Jackson, who at the time was had some kind of capacity with the New York Yankees, says, well, of course they were juicing. How else do you think the guy's hitting 70-plus homers? Words to that effect. He got yelled at by the commissioner.
Whether it was because of a shoddy testing program or because Balco's stuff was still too good to detect, Bonds never once failed an MLB steroid test. And then, in 2007, he broke Henry Aaron's career home run record. The only other player in history to hold both the single season and career records was Babe Ruth himself. Major League Baseball never punished Bonds. But years later, Nowitzki found himself back in court with the slugger. You see, Bonds had allegedly lied under oath about his steroid use during the initial investigation, back when he had immunity, back when all anyone wanted was a shred of honesty. So in 2011, 4 years after he retired, he went to trial for obstructing justice.
I can tell you definitively, we were not excited about prosecuting Barry Bonds. We were like, he forced our hand. This is going to be really difficult to bring a criminal prosecution against one of the most beloved athletes in the Bay Area.
Bonds was found guilty and sentenced to 30 days of house arrest. But he did manage to get his conviction overturned 4 years later. By then, Jeff Nowitzki had moved on. After Balco, he turned his attention to Lance Armstrong, and he continued to feel like he was being targeted for taking down people's heroes.
I mean, I still to this day look in my rearview mirror when I'm driving around and kind of have, you know, an eye behind me.
All in all, the Balco case lasted about 5 years. That's from Nowitzki's first trip to the trash until the day Troy Ellerman was sentenced for leaking the testimony. Over that time, Major League Baseball's official stance on steroid testing, at least on paper, totally changed. But it wasn't because of Balco, and it wasn't because of Bonds.
You'd rise with me and raise your right hand.
That's next on Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program to bring you a special bulletin.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting, this is Jim Briggs
and Fernando Arruda. We're the sound designers behind Reveal.
Each week, we create an album of original music for every single episode.
We like to think thematically and create music that will help listeners understand the story.
It's all available for download. You can find it at revealnews.bandcamp.com.
Thanks for listening.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Today, we're looking back at how Major League Baseball was finally forced to reckon with its steroid problem. Associated Press reporter Steve Wilstein first saw a suspicious bottle of pills in Mark McGwire's locker in 1998. But it took 7 years before America was finally ready to confront the issue. In 2005, members of Congress subpoenaed Major League Baseball leaders and star players. Here's McGwire being questioned.
In the year you were breaking the home run record, a bottle of Andro was seen in your locker. How did you get to that point where that was what you were using to prepare yourself to play?
Well, sir, I'm not here to talk about the past. I'm here to talk about the positive and not the negative about this issue.
Were you ever counseled that precursors or designer steroids might have the same impact?
I'm not here to talk about the past.
As I understand it, both Mr. Schilling, Mr. Thomas, and Mr. Palmaro, and I think Mr. Sosa, has said they never used the substances. Now, Mr. McGwire, would you like to comment on that? I didn't get a definitive answer. I didn't hear you say anything about it. You don't have to. I just ask. You don't want to comment? Are you taking the fifth?
I'm not here to discuss the past. I'm here to be positive about this subject.
Baseball didn't want to talk, but lawmakers tried to force them. Here's Joe Neeson, host of the podcast Crushed, to tell us how it all shook out.
In the days and weeks before the hearings, MLB leadership claimed the league's new steroid policy was the gold standard in sports. But when lawmakers asked to see the policy, they refused to share it. Congress had to issue a subpoena to get its hands on a copy.
I'd like to run down a few key provisions of baseball's policy and ask for your professional opinion.
That's Representative Henry Waxman, posing a series of questions to Dr. Gary Wadler, one of the doctors who testified that day.
Does the policy cover all anabolic steroids?
No.
Does the policy contain adequate penalties?
Categorically, in my view, not.
And then let me ask you this. Will this new policy remove the cloud that has been hanging over baseball?
Unfortunately, I think it increased the cloud.
MLB's policy was a disaster. It didn't test for human growth hormone, and players could test positive 5 times before they were banned for life. They were also allowed to leave the room in the middle of their tests. It's as if the league was inviting them to cheat. And here's the most ridiculous detail of all. First-time offenders had a choice. They could either be suspended and their steroid use would be made public, or they could quietly pay a $10,000 fine and move on without anyone knowing the difference. Baseball said the policy it sent over was just a draft, revising the one it used the previous year in the first season of testing. Here's Selig being questioned by congressmen, one after the next.
You say nobody came to you, and yet there were articles in the newspaper. What people turning their backs?
I don't believe people were turning their backs. No, I certainly do not believe that. There were very few articles.
Selig, how many people have you suspended?
Well, this policy has just kicked in.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I wish I knew in 1995, 6, 7, and 8 what I know today. Okay. I'll acknowledge that.
I understand, but and I just tell you, this document, for you to send this to us and expect us to use this during this hearing, it's an embarrassment to me, and I would hope that it would be an embarrassment to Major League Baseball.
Selig was the only one in the room who might have come off worse than McGuire did. And Major League Baseball needed to do something to look like it was in control of the situation. So Selig hired former Senator George Mitchell to dig into his league's secrets, to try to draw some conclusion about what had happened and how to move forward. The investigation would eventually yield the Mitchell Report.
For more than a decade, there has been widespread illegal use of anabolic steroids and other performance-enhancing substances by players in Major League Baseball.
The evidence that's George Mitchell, speaking at a press conference after the Mitchell Report was released. The information he shared was damning, and the report called the steroid era a collective failure.
Many players were involved.
Everybody was in the wrong, and that's about all the report got right. It was supposed to put MLB under a microscope, help the league turn a corner. And it did document institutional failures and make several recommendations about drug policies and cooperating with law enforcement. But the report only skimmed the surface of the problem. It didn't hold anyone in power accountable, didn't point out all the ways managers, front offices, and owners were so distracted by dollar signs that they intentionally looked the other way.
There's not proof about them like actually handing them out in clubhouses.
That's Dave Zirin, the sports editor at The Nation. He wrote frequently about baseball in the aftermath of the steroid era.
This idea of benign neglect, of looking the other way, I mean, anyone who's been in a clubhouse would know that, like, the facilitation of drugs without people in management knowing is kind of ludicrous.
Zirin thought the Mitchell Report was more about PR than change, about shifting blame away from the league and toward players, everyone from Bonds and McGuire to guys most of us have never heard of. In fact, it focused most of its resources on cobbling together a list of 89 players who'd allegedly used anabolic steroids. And that list, that's what people remember.
Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, Miguel Tejada, those are just some of the big names revealed in a 20-month investigation into performance-enhancing drug use in baseball.
It was safer to blame a few guys who could be hastily scrubbed from the league's history than to look inward at a beloved American institution.
Baseball was trying to cover its own tracks, protect ownership, protect general managers, protect the pipeline, and throw a couple of players under the bus. And that's exactly what the Mitchell Report delivered. I mean, the idea is you project the message that we aren't run by cheaters, we're on the up and up, and then people go back to the parks.
Same as it is, same as it ever was. MLB wanted butts in seats. After all, attendance had surged over the course of the steroid era after bottoming out in the seasons after the strike. So the home run race brought fans back. But it never would have happened without steroids. But now, the steroid scandal could end up chasing those same fans away. Here's sports writer Howard Bryan again.
Can you have a financial renaissance and a moral decline simultaneously? The answer is yes. They literally felt like they were fighting for the survival of their industry. And that's why there was no appetite to really look at what was taking place.
2 years after the Mitchell Report was released and 5 years after the congressional hearings, Mark McGuire was finally ready to talk about the past. He released a statement to the Associated Press, admitting that he'd used anabolic steroids during his career. Then he sat for an interview with Bob Costas on MLB Network.
You used them first, what season?
Well, what season? Well, during the season would be starting, I started using it, the 93, going the winter of 93, 94, going in that season.
McGuire said he'd been so beaten down by injuries in the early 90s that he'd considered retiring until steroids helped him get healthy again. But that's about all the credit he gave the drugs, which he kept on taking for years.
I mean, I knew I was talented. I knew the man upstairs gave me the ability to hit this baseball, gave me the hand-eye coordination. My parents gave me the great genetics, but I was running these roadblocks.
Could you have hit 70 home runs? Could you have had a home run ratio greater than anything Babe Ruth did in his time without using steroids?
Absolutely. I was given this gift by the man upstairs.
I was surprised when he repeatedly claimed that all he needed it for was to get back on the field and that he would have otherwise done exactly what he did without PEDs.
That's Costas, telling me about the confession a decade later.
I'm not sure he's lying. Maybe he really believes it. Maybe he's convinced himself that he didn't need PEDs to put up the numbers he put up.
There's not a pill or an injection that is going to give me the hand-eye or give any athlete a hand-eye coordination to hit a baseball.
Well, if that's the case, then you must genuinely regret. You could have done essentially what you did without ever touching performance-enhancing drugs.
It's the most regrettable thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, he wouldn't come off of it, Joan. And I had some second thoughts the next day. Should I have gone, full prosecutorial on him? But as it was unfolding, I knew that he was on the rope. Did I have to really deliver the knockout blow? I felt bad for him.
As far as confessions go, this was bad. For years, McGuire and other superstar steroid users had wanted everyone to ignore what they saw with their own two eyes and believe the unbelievable. And here he was, appealing to America to keep on fooling itself. It didn't land.
This should have been a great day for McGuire, but the first day of the rest of his baseball life, and he blew it.
I'm sorry, in 2010, I think you'd be naive to believe that there's no connection between steroids and performance.
And one of his things was, in his tearful apology, is, I want to apologize to all the players. Hey, Mark, how about apologizing to all the fans?
So, yes, McGuire was let back in. He became a hitting coach. But that didn't change the fact that many people on the outside saw him, and still see him, as the face of the steroid era. He is blamed for poisoning a game we hold dear, even though MLB didn't have an explicit rule banning steroids while he played. In fact, McGuire never failed an MLB steroid test. He was never even made to take one. And what about the men who had all the power to put an end to the steroid era back then, and didn't? Commissioner Bud Selig, Players Union Executive Director Donald Fear. I reached out to both of them for this project, and neither would talk. That silence extends to most players, too. I contacted more than 70 of them, guys who played at the height of the steroid era, and only 5 agreed to an interview. You can hear from them in the rest of our podcast series. Unfortunately, McGuire didn't respond to multiple interview requests. And in a way, I understand why he and so many others would want to stay quiet. Players shoulder the blame for this, because it's easy to picture a face, a once treasured baseball card, and channel anger there, in a straight and uncomplicated line to the men who were once our heroes. But that ignores a massive part of the steroids story. Because really, it's a story of systemic failure, one where baseball leaders were just as complicit as the men in uniforms.
That was Joan Neeson from Crushed. Today, Major League Baseball has one of the most effective steroid testing programs in sports. It covers a wide spectrum of performance-enhancing drugs. It can trace down to nanogram amounts, Now, it takes three positive tests for a player to be banned for life, which is a pretty good incentive to stay clean. So yes, baseball's steroid era is over. But the record book is tarnished. And the scandal and all those years of silence from the league planted a seed of doubt. And that doubt still festers. When you go to the ballpark this summer, you have to wonder, should I believe what I'm seeing? Thanks to the whole team at Religion of Sports for bringing us this week's show. Their podcast looks at the legacy of baseball's farthest-reaching scandal. Be sure to check it out. That's Crushed from Religion of Sports. And while you're at it, don't forget to subscribe to Reveal on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Our lead producer for this week's show is Jessica Popovac of Religion of Sports. Catherine Miskowski from Reveal edited our show. Special thanks to Devin Manzi, Michael Garofalo, and Megan Coyle of Religion of Sports. Also to Jane Ackerman and composer Michael Kramer. Crushed executive producers are Gotham Chopra, Amit Sakharan, and Adam Schlossman. And a shout out to former Reveal colleague Lance Williams, who you heard earlier in this hour talking about Balco. Victoria Baranetsky is our general counsel. Our production manager is Amy the Great Mustafa. Our sound design team is the dynamic duo Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Fernando, my man, Yo Aruda. Claire C. Note Mullen mixed the show for us this week. Our post-production team is the Justice League. This week it includes Jess Alvarenga, Steven Rascon, and Catherine Steyer-Martinez. Our fact checker is Nikki Frick. Our digital producer is Sarah Merck. Our CEO is Kezar Kampwala. Sumi Agarwal is our editor-in-chief, and our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music is by Camerato, Lightning. Support for Reveals provided by the Reva and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, the Hellman Foundation, the Democracy Fund, and the In As Much Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Edson. And remember, there is always more to the story.